It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here with news of Threshold, the next version of Windows. There's a lot to say. Stay tuned. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 339, recorded December 5th, 2013. Technical Foul. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, visit audible.com/windows. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/windows. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover all your Windows needs with the Xbox-addled Paul Thurrott, the super site for Windows, and the Hadoop girl. Mary Jo Foley of AllAboutMicrosoft.com. Hello, boy and girl. How are you?
Hello.
Hello. So how you feeling? I know we're going to talk about Threshold. Mary Jo's got a huge scoop.
Yeah.
It's very exciting, but before we do that, how you liking the Xbox One, Paul? Sorry, Mary Jo. We should have done this when your mic wasn't working.
You should have.
Yeah.
Right. I like it a lot.
Me too. I see you play a lot of Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Because you're my friend.
Yes. Yes, I am, Leo.
Whenever I fire up, what are my friends up to? Paul Thurrott's level up a Call of Duty. Paul up the Call of Duty.
I promise I'm going to get off of this game eventually.
You like the dog?
Yeah,
now?
I mean, I like it a lot. I see the future in this thing. I get it.
Me too.
I think
I'm
the $500 is really expensive.
Is it? Is that a deal breaker?
I think it is for a lot of people.
For a lot of people.
It doesn't help that it's hard to find right now, too. But I think for a lot of folks who play games on an Xbox 360, there's not a lot in the new gen that's super compelling game-wise. And for people with a 360 or a Roku or Apple TV or whatever you might use in the living room, you know, that stuff is on the Xbox One, too, and it's cool. And it's got TV pass-through functionality and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think it's one, you know, people... I guess the way I would say it, I think I did write something like this in my review, is if you have a question about whether you need this thing right now, just wait. You know, the people who are going to buy it now are the hardcore gamers, the guys who just
love
Xbox. Yeah, there's no rush. These things are going to be around for years. So
I think it's going to it'll be spring before we see exclusive games that are compelling.
Yep. And I think, like a lot of people, I'm holding out a lot of hope for Titanfall as the big one. Mm-hmm. First big one. And we'll see. You know, we'll see if that does it. Gears of War kind of did that for the 360, if you think about it.
Is there a new Gears of War going to come for this?
No. And I'm not sure what's going on with that. I know they've talked about it and they want to do something new with it, but no, not yet.
I've been playing Rise. It's interesting. It's one of the few exclusives. It's cool. It's not a big game. It's not a long game, but it's fun. It's fun to be a Centurion and have muscles. I can't tell you what a thrill that is.
Sure.
You know, it's good they don't make you play to type, because otherwise I'd be the Emperor Nero in that game. But fortunately, I'm
a big strong Centurion. I'll save you, Emperor.
Dead Rising 3, ho-hum. You know, a lot of zombies. I kind of like Assassin's. I've always liked Assassin's Creed. This one, you're a pirate. I'm in Havana right now, Cuba. Mm-hmm. It's fun. My trouble is, and maybe you can help me, with controllers.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to chase like people in the city of Havana, and I keep climbing things. I don't want, you know, because that's one of the big skills.
That's an Assassin's Creed thing. That's always been the problem.
I don't want to climb it. I want to run.
Yep. They want you to climb, Leo.
It's like there's something like a hay wagon. Yeah, I jump into it.
The inadvertent ladder climb was the monotony of the repetition was the kill for the first Assassin's Creed. It's always been like that.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. All right. Anyway, and you know, I know you're a
a Call of Duty guy, but I think Battlefield 4 is quite a good game, too.
Yeah, so my son is now logging in as himself, so actually a lot of Battlefield 4.
Oh, I thought you were playing. I kept seeing these Battlefield 4 videos that Paul Thurrott was posting on.
No, those are my son.
Oh, I was gonna rat you out.
It's gonna be weird for him because when I was a kid, if we got, you know, we got like a television or whatever, you know, like my dad was never gonna play that thing, you know. And then in today's age, of course, the Xbox One comes into the house and it's in my office, right? And so this poor kid comes home every day and his thing is here, but he can't really use it because it's in my office. And so he kind of strategically waits for me to finally, you know, lurk out of here, and then he rushes in. Can do on it. But
this morning I got up, I found a glass of wine with a Smarties wrapper in it. And I figured, I know that wasn't me. So somebody was playing my Xbox One in my office. Because, yeah, that's where it's hidden at.
That's the kind of food combination, like beer and M&Ms. Yeah. That only a young person
Could do a glass of
wine. Determine was the right combination.
A fine Bordeaux and a package of Smarties. There's nothing quite like it. All right. So sorry, Mary Jo. We're done.
Let's talk Hadoop.
No. You can. This is a big scoop for you. And it does involve the Xbox One, I guess.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. So I, you know, everyone jokes that I don't care about the Xbox One. I do. I care about the operating system in the Xbox One. I don't care about Call of Duty, but I care about the OS. So I'm not totally sleeping. I'm only half sleeping.
I accept.
And Threshold, in fact, I see. Windows plus phone plus Xbox One equals Threshold. What the hell is Threshold?
Yeah. Well, I should let Paul answer this, actually. And actually, you know what's funny? I think I need to get an Xbox only so I can keep up with these new code names coming out of Microsoft, because Threshold is an Xbox code name.
Oh.
It has to do, and Paul will correct me if I'm wrong, it has to do with the very first version of Halo, I believe, and it was about a planet called Threshold.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I could be wrong about this, too, although I played that game many times. I believe the Threshold was the planet around which the first Halo ring
evolved. That's correct. According to Halo Wikipedia or Wiki or whatever.
Yeah, Halo. Right.
It's been so long. I mean, that was a decade, more than a decade ago.
Yeah.
And I remember we played a lot of that game during the commercial breaks on the screensavers. They'd come back from commercial, they'd catch me and Kevin Rose and Ford and everybody playing Halo.
Yeah. I think that was the big launch title.
I think this is an interesting thing. It's also a neutral zone, right, in Halo for some reason.
That I don't remember. There was no neutral when I played
Halo. I'm just reading from the wiki.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting too, right? So you know, the way to think about Threshold is, you know how Blue was a wave of products that it affected everything. Yeah. There was a Blue phone and a Blue Windows and Blue even influenced the Xbox One. Well, this is what Threshold is. It's the next wave. It's like the same thing as Blue, except in starting or in the midst of spring 2015. That's what I think.
Given that, do you think they'll call it 8.2? I mean, is that the logical progression?
I don't think we know what the numbering will be on it, but I do think it'll be 8.something based on a webcast that I saw with Terry Meyerson, who's running the Unified Operating System Division, because he said, you know, maybe we'll call the future stuff 8.something, 8.1, 8.2, blah, blah, blah. So he kind of hinted that's what they're going to stick with for a while.
So Threshold is the next, like Blue, the next thing.
Yeah.
Next wave,
it's like the next big, if you want to call it a major release, it's the next major release of phone, Xbox operating system, and Windows.
So in the reorg, does that make sense? Is that one division, all of that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Okay. It is. Yeah, all those things are under Terry Meyerson. So phone is under him, the phone operating system, the Xbox operating system, embedded is even under him, the Perceptive Pixel display OS pieces.
So that's kind of telling that reorg put these divisions in under one roof.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting how Terry Meyerson, of course, comes from Windows Phone, is very quickly putting his stamp on OS development at Microsoft. You know, this is very different from the days of Steven Sinofsky, where they they kind of took the Metro stuff that the Windows Phone guys had done, but then they just ran with it in their own direction. They didn't really work with them at all, which I always found to be very tragic, because the phone guys had made certain mistakes or had done some things right or whatever. And the Windows team never benefited from any of that information because they just didn't pay attention. They weren't interested in talking to those guys. They wanted, you know, they thought they could just do it on their own. And now those products are maybe a little too far apart, you know, further apart than they have to be.
Right. Because, you know, the thing that's going to happen next year, so Threshold's a 2015 thing, but what happens in the spring of 2014 is Microsoft finally delivers Windows Phone Blue. So just like Paul's saying, it's like, why is that lagging so far behind the operating system, the Windows operating system? It shouldn't have all kind of been closer together. I mean, I had heard some things saying they had to wait for Microsoft to finish Windows Blue so they could take the APIs and use them for the phone. But they finished Windows Blue in August, right? Around that. That's when an RTM.
Yeah, so it's still 6 to 8 months, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah. It is.
Well, the other thing is, you know, before that release, Windows Phone had been on an annual release. They were doing the rapid release cycle. And they even did the major leap from the, you know, CE code base to the NT code base with Windows Phone 8, delivered it in a year. And then as soon as they delivered that, they went on to an 18-month release cycle instead of 12 months. It was so strange. And you have to think that if they had been doing a concerted effort across OSs like they are now, that wouldn't have happened, because these things could, you know, have evolved in lockstep, which frankly would make more sense for everybody, you know, developers, users, and Microsoft itself.
Yeah. It's also kind of telling that at the same time as Windows Phone Blue comes out in the spring of 2014, there's supposed to be something that right now inside seems to be called Update 1 for Windows 8.1. So that, I think, is going to also make sure that the APIs in Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1 start to overlap even more. So there may be some API level changes to whatever that thing is, that minor update. But that's still kind of part of the blue wave, not Threshold, as far as I understand it.
So, yeah. I have a feeling that Terry Myerson's oversight of the OSs at Microsoft is going to be marked, at least these first few years, just by him bringing the stuff together. I mean, I think that effort is difficult.
That's what's going on. That's the delay.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Plus, you know, they're waiting for the new CEO to be named, probably. I mean, they're still going forward with their jobs, but everybody's still a little reticent to go too far, I'm sure, because you're waiting to see, like, okay, is the new CEO buying in on this? I mean, you would assume they're not going to bring somebody in who's going to say, you know what, let's undo the reorg and start over. That would be catastrophic.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. Which, by the way,
maybe Windows Phone should be separate from Windows.
Yeah. Maybe we should sell off Xbox. Right?
Yeah. And that was the rumor that ELOP would do. Yeah. But I think that you don't bring in somebody who's going to do that. And
no.
So.
Now, they love these synergies, you know. I mean, ultimately, I think we, from the outside, it's very easy to be dispassionate about it and say, you know, Xbox is only lost money, they should get rid of Xbox.
Right. Would you say that? Is that, you think, a fair thing to say?
I have to go to the door. I'll be right back.
Okay.
I apologize.
No, that's fine.
Well, I mean, yeah, they've lost a lot of money on the Xbox. They have. I mean, it from the get-go, they've lost a lot of money.
There's no profit at all?
Yeah, there is now, but it took them, like over a decade to start seeing a profit with Xbox, because they had to do everything,
lost money if you look at the whole life of it.
Yeah.
Well, this
would
be the wrong time, now that it's turned the corner.
I know.
To divest. I mean, this is where you reap the benefits of years of investment, right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's what I would think.
That's what I would think, but of course, what do we know?
Nothing.
If we were smart, we'd be on the candidates list.
to answer the question you asked and the question you didn't ask, my son was locked out of the house, and it's easy from the outside, you know, to say things, you know, when you don't have all the answers. I'm struck by, you know, I'm going to bring this up not as a political thing, but because I think anyone, regardless of where you fall politically, you'll understand this. You know, when President Obama was elected, he was going to do certain things. He was going to get rid of Guantanamo Bay. He was going to get out of Afghanistan, whatever.
None of that stuff.
I think what happens is you get into the job, and then they pull you aside, and they say, oh, by the way, this is going on, and this is going on, and we don't talk about this publicly, but this is going on, and then things change. And this information that Microsoft has internally about these things that are not just pluses and minuses in a balance, you know, sheet or whatever,
right?
That weigh more heavily in the decision about whether you want to keep something like Xbox or Bing or whatever. And so, you know, again, it's easy for us. We talk about this stuff and we have our opinions and everything, but I don't think we can really, you know, we don't know. We're not there. You know, we don't know how it impacts the whole business. Right. So I think there's more to it.
God, that's way too even-handed, Paul. I think you need.
Sorry. Well, let me say something truly biased.
I hate it when you think like that.
Yeah. I've been sick. Right.
The only thing I think of is those dim dark days when Microsoft had two different operating systems, a consumer operating system in Windows 98 and a business operating system in Windows NT. And they made.
But you mean the good old days?
The good, bad, whatever. Windows 2000, yeah. Windows. Yeah. And so that's what XP was a grand unification. Mm-hmm. And is that the kind of thing we're talking about here? Or because now they've really got three tracks. Like it, whether they admit it or not, in their marketing.
You can contort this to them having 7 or 8 tracks if you want to talk about embedded OS and server is something separate, and Azure is something separate, and there's all kinds of OSs happening at Microsoft, really.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
But we also should talk about this thing that kind of is crystallizing this week as well around this idea of what Windows is going to look like in the future. Because We talked about Terry Myerson talking at a Credit Suisse meeting this week, and he dropped a few more hints, and there have been other hints from my sources that the way they're building Windows is changing even further from what they've been doing recently. So the new idea is, yes, you're going to have this common core like you have now, but it's going to get even more common across all these different things. So they're going to have more levels of APIs that are shared. They're going to have the driver model shared, the file system shared. And that, on top of that, is where they're going to differentiate. So they're going to have some set number of SKUs that are going to work on different devices. So we don't know how many. Maybe there'll be 3 or 4. Some will work on phones and phablets and mini tablets. Some might work just on enterprise type machines. Some may be just on clamshell style PCs. But so when Microsoft talks about one Windows, what they really mean is one base platform, but lots of different things that are kind of tailored for different members of the family. So that's something to keep in mind, too, when we talk about threshold, because that's a change. It's not going to be a million different SKUs like it is now. It's probably going to be fewer SKUs with more things in common, but still not just one or two. It's going to be like, I would guess 4 or 5.
It's kind of funny how old this debate is, you know, this conversation or whatever, because one of the central points of Longhorn and then Windows Vista was to componentize Windows so that they could do this kind of thing more easily. And they've improved that, I think, over the years. Windows 7 probably improved it somewhat again. But this is, it's weird. I feel like this, you could almost bring back, I'd have to go back and try to find these things. I'm sure I wrote articles at one point where I said, you know, consumer version of Windows should be developed separately from the pro version. They would share the same core. They would have the same runtime, and so they would run the same apps. But there's no reason that the consumer version of Windows could look completely different from the business version. As long as they ran the same applications, you know, what would be the difference? I don't know. It's interesting. So I bet the consumer version is the one that develops post-desktop, and the desktop version is the one that never drops a desktop, you know what I mean, or something like that. You can almost see it going in that direction.
Maybe it's a misnomer. Maybe I misunderstood it when I said they went from 2 to 1, because I think they've always had multiple. They've had server operations.
They have.
So it really isn't. It's
well, they've had different Windows kind of cores, right? I mean, Windows CE may have been based on Windows, but it's really been developed separately and, you know, well, until recently ran on different architectures than traditional Windows.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think starting from a common core makes all kinds of sense, and that you could just, they don't have to be strict supersets of each other, but they could be supersets of some core.
Is it a common core or a common API? That's the other thing I'm confused
both.
About.
It should be both, right?
It should be both.
Right. So right now we have the common core, right? Like Xbox One, Windows Phone, and Windows all have the common NT core. We already have that now. But what they're going to do is layer even more levels of commonality on top. So then things like file system, more of the APIs, because supposedly I've heard like only 1/3 of the APIs are shared right now between Windows Phone and Windows RT, even though they both run on ARM. So they're going to try to increase those levels of commonality at the API level. And also at like drivers, file systems, a lot of the infrastructure layers that are on top of just the base core. So yeah, it starts to become a true shared core. And when we say core becomes a bigger piece of the whole, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm getting some interesting questions on Twitter because there's a lot, obviously, we don't know, right? Like people are saying, what about backwards compatibility? So what do you do if you have a Windows Phone app that's already been written for Windows Phone 8? And now will it continue to run on this new SKU, whatever that is, because it has more changes at the API level? I mean, I'm sure Microsoft's goal is to make it so it can, and that your Windows 8.1 apps will continue to run no matter what happens at the core. But how? Right. That's the part we don't know. Well, how are they going to do that?
Don't Windows Phone 7 apps run on Windows Phone 8?
They do. Today? They do.
So
yep.
Going from WinPRT to some future set of API, runtime, whatever you want to call it, shouldn't be difficult now. We are running on a common core. So
True. I guess it depends how much you change the API and the UX.
Microsoft would be insane to reset Windows Phone again. Right? I mean,
I know.
whatever ill will they got from the last one, you can exponentially expand on that. I mean, it would be horrible.
Agreed.
When you say one core, you mean one kernel in the sense that we think of an operating system kernel, or?
I think so.
A little more than the kernel. Yeah, kernel plus, I would say. But yeah.
Plus what?
Kernel plus file system APIs, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like more than just like the kernel, because kernel has a very specific meaning in operating systems.
Right.
But more than that, but not like the entire OS is the same, right? Like, it wouldn't make any sense to have a phone operating system run on your Xbox, right? Like, that just doesn't make sense. So, it's not a pure one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like, it's a little oversimplified.
That's the top level, though. That's the UI layer, which is obviously the UI layers are going to differ.
Yeah.
But if APIs are, that means that the APIs can't be monolithic because drawing a window on a phone is different than drawing a window on an Xbox is different than drawing a window on a desktop.
Yeah, these things have to differ. But, you know, if you're a developer, you may appreciate that moving from languages that are very similar, JavaScript, C, C#, Objective-C, whatever, Java, you know, back and forth. It's the little differences of those things that can kind of kill you. Mm-hmm. Microsoft right now for end users is selling this notion of one experience across Xbox, Windows Phone.
Right.
And they're close. They have tiles and you select a tile and it runs an app and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, again, it's the little things, you know. People who like Windows Phone like the fact that you can customize all of the tiles to be the same color scheme or whatever. And Xbox One works the same way.
Yeah.
Windows 8 does not. Right. So here you get this thing that's the oldest of the three that does this, has this feature. The one that came next does not. And then the one that came most recently does. Right. And so there's these weird inconsistencies. And you know, they don't. It's not as horrible, obviously, for an end user for this kind of thing. But I think part of the deal through these transitions, whether it's this exact OS update that Mary Jo's talking about or whatever interim update one, whatever, is to kind of bring those things closer together to make that one experience really closer to being one actual experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
That makes sense.
Another question people are asking is what happens to desktop, right? Because we've talked on this show about desktop possibly, if not probably, going away at some point.
Yeah, we hate the desktop. Nobody wants the desktop. The desktop sucks. Okay, now
Leo, have completely misunderstood the message.
So I
would
been asking.
Distance myself from you.
I have nothing to do.
Me too.
Go ahead, tweet him now.
Yeah. So I've been asking around a lot about this, and I'm hearing that. One thing that is, and this to me is very encouraging and reassuring, is the Windows team now is kind of doing a little backtracking, even beyond just adding the start button. They're thinking, okay, what do we have to do to make it so Windows 7 users are going to not be afraid when it's time for them to move to Windows 8.
And so one of the things, be very afraid.
Right. I recommend something called Windows 7.8.
Exactly. So you got to keep the desktop around for these people, right? Because they need their existing legacy apps. They can't do without them. So I think we may have been a little hasty in predicting when the desktop totally goes away, because I think it's going to stay. And the way it probably will stay is many of the SKUs we're talking about, these different SKUs, won't have it, but there will always be at least one that does, right? And that's right. For the people who can't live without the desktop.
So a professional version, perhaps, of Windows or Enterprise or something.
Right.
Well, one thing I've been asking for a long time, and given the climate and the way that things have gone, it now seems to me like it's possible, is this notion of Microsoft continuing to evolve the desktop and to provide desktop applications with additional capabilities that would allow them to coexist in this kind of metro world better. Like actual support for full screen apps is something that Apple added to Mac OS X a few releases ago, mm-hmm. where you could use the desktop version of Photoshop or Office or whatever and kind of tab between it and metro apps and see no visual difference. You know, because when you go to the desktop, it's like you're dumped into kind of a ghetto. It's got its own little separate task switching interface. It's got a taskbar. It's got, you know, this is all this kind of extra junk. And some people obviously like that, and I'm actually among them. But, you know, for people that want to make this transition, and I think, or whether you want to or not, eventually we'll all make this transition, it would be nice for the desktop environment to be updated, you know, to be more sophisticated, and even to have apps that follow certain rules be allowed into the Windows Store. And the point being, you know that when you get something from the store, it's safe, that it respects the power management functionality of the machine, whatever. There's no reason that desktop apps couldn't be written to take advantage of some of that stuff as well. And so if some future version of Windows or whatever it is provides any additional functionality, you know, it's not just something deprecated, but it's something that's actually improved. I think that's your proof right there that they're taking a step back from maybe tunneling down in some crazy direction that a lot of people were really nervous about.
Let's take this would be a good time to take a little Audible break, don't you think?
If only there was an Xbox One book on Audible.
Ah, is there?
No, I don't know.
No, I don't know either.
I don't know.
Yeah. Audible.com. If you're interested in audio books, this is a great place to go. 150,000. Really, I don't think there's a close number two, to be honest with you. I think Audible dominates this space, and rightly so. They've been doing it for a long, long time. I became an Audible customer practically in the last century, in the year 2000. Oh. And I think they had just started. I first listened to Audible books on a Diamond Rio.
Oh yeah,
500. And now, of course, I listen everywhere. It's the Audible app is on Android, it's on iPhone, it's on Windows 8, and it's a great way to listen because your whole library is on there. In fact, I should fire up my. My Audible app and show you my library on the phone. It's really great. I mean, when I'm in the car, when I'm at the gym, I'm listening to audiobooks. I'm learning great stuff. On Android, there's a nice Audible widget that makes it very easy to control it right from the front screen. Audible now, see, these are the books I've downloaded onto my Audible, but then I also have in my cloud all the books I've ever listened to, and I mean all of them. That's 500-plus titles on Audible.com. There's The Stand from Stephen King. What a great book that was. 47 hours and 52 minutes. You're listening to the best actors, the best performers. So these books really come alive, and I love that, too. You know, this is a library now. In fact, there's a lot of these books that I haven't, I never listened to. Like, I listened to the first Stieg Larsson, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but I haven't listened to the second and the third. So this is in my library, and I can always go back and listen to it. It's very much like a real library, except it's on your device, on multiple devices. I have it on my iPhone, my Android phones, my iPads, my Nexus 7, and I can listen anytime. I'm listening right now to Difficult Men. It's behind. Oh, this is nice. It syncs up, by the way, on any device. Behind the scenes. I'm listening to the behind the scenes of Deadwood right now, but it was The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, The Wire. It's really, really great stuff. What do you listen? Paul listens to, I know. What are you listening to these days, Paul?
Yeah, I just two things about Audible. One is they had some kind of a Black Friday type sale or Cyber Monday sale or whatever. So I bought maybe 10 books.
They were like $5 each, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bunch of science fiction. I got a lot of Larry Niven. I got some Arthur C. Clarke, Ray Bradbury, sorry. Lucifer's Hammer by Niven and Pornell. Oh,
such a good... I have that book.
Classic. Ready Player One, stuff like that.
So the deal is that's the Audible Frontiers thing. Audible's been recording... When I first joined Audible in 2000, there were very few sci-fi books. But thanks to Audible Frontiers, they've made the point of recording these. And it's
wonderful. And Logan's Run.
Oh, there you
which
go.
Which I actually just rewatched the, that late 1978 movie.
I've only
movie.
Seen the movie. Is there a book?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I got it. It was so, and it's only 5.5 hours long. So that's one of the ones I picked up as well. I'm very curious about it.
I love the cover of this. The movie.
Pure 70s science fiction, you know.
I love it. I can't. I'll listen to it. You know, a lot of times the movies, as cheesy as they are, don't live up to the quality of the books. I watched Dune last night. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But the book, in fact, the Dune that I listened to was a dramatization. It was wonderful.
But
wonderful.
Actually, the book that I'm recommending is a recent re-edit of The Exorcist, which they're calling like the 40th anniversary edition. I think it came out in 2011. I've told people who don't like horror movies repeatedly that this is one of the best movies that's ever been made, regardless of.
Oh, I agree. I thought that was an amazing book.
My son is finally old enough. He likes horror movies, and so I said, okay, we're gonna have an adult moment here. You're gonna watch this, and yeah, he loved it. But it triggered me to go back and look at the books again because, I discovered they have a 40th anniversary edition. Unfortunately, the author who narrates this is excellent,
William Peter Blatty.
Yeah, he wrote a sequel to this book called Legion, which they made into a pretty bad movie. But that book is fantastic. I'm hoping that shows up on Audible someday, and I'd love for him to do the reading. But The Exorcist is such a fantastic book. And for people who are kind of iffy about horror stuff, it's misunderstood. It's very it's in many ways very uplifting. I know it sounds crazy because it's about demon
possession. Well, let me ask you this. You see the movie The Exorcist. It's really viscerally scary. Can the book be as scary?
Yeah. So the book, by the way, so the movie was made in conjunction with the author. He was on set all the time. That he made it with the director. He was part of it. The dialogue from the movie is straight out of the book. And the second one's even better for the stuff. There's a lot of conversations between a cop and a priest where they discuss life and they kind of meander around different things. And there's even more of that in the sequel. But the book, in the best possible sense, because, if you've ever really liked a movie and it's based on a book and you go read the book and it expands on the story, this does that. And the 40th anniversary edition actually adds a scene where the priest is visited by what he originally takes to be a priest in need of help. And then he begins to realize that actually the priest has been sent there to help him. And then he wakes up and he realizes actually that was the demon coming to try to scare me. Yeah, it's really, really, really it's fantastic. So anyway, this is a fantastic story. It's really one of the best ones.
Mary Jo, do you like horror movies?
I don't.
No, I didn't think you did.
I do not. Yeah.
I don't like horror movies because they're too scary, but I love...
Well, the other thing is I love listening to them because, for hours.
Yeah.
This was made at a time where the Catholic Church hadn't given up its moral authority like it has, obviously, over the past 40 years or whatever. And there's some amazing stuff about religion in here, which, again, is very affirming. I'm not particularly religious myself, but the religious stuff that's in here is actually pretty fascinating. The whole
I'm
thing
downloading
is,
it. This sounds
it's amazing.
Great. Yeah.
It is amazing.
Yeah. Now, what I do, because I've used up my credits, you could buy it, and I missed the sale, but you could add it to your wish list once you're an Audible subscriber. Yeah. And then that way, I keep my wish list pretty well stocked.
By the way, the other thing to do is to look, the price of that is for you is $22. And so if you buy this book on the Kindle, see how much that is. And if it's only about $10, you can probably get this for $3 or $4.
Oh, see, that's the
price. You can save some money that
way. Yeah, so you get the audio book for $3.49. If you buy it on the Kindle book for $6.64, so a total of about $10, and you'll get both the Kindle and the audiobook. That's a pretty good deal. You're clever. That's clever. And the nice thing about that is Whisper Sync enabled, which means you can read it and it'll pick up the audiobook where you left off and vice versa, which is kind of cool.
I love that, yeah.
Audible.com/windows. We're going to set you up with a book free, so it could be this or like zero free. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's a book a month. Your first month's free. Your first book is free. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. You get to keep the book. Pay nothing. You also, by the way, will get each day the audio, abridged audio edition of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, which is so cool. If you like thrillers, if you like horror, if you like science fiction, if you like biography, if you like history, to me, they have the great courses now. They have language courses. To me, this is the best way to use that downtime that you're at the gym, you're in the car on the commute, you're in the airplane, and it makes the stuff just fly by. Fly by. I just got all the, I added to my library all the, you know, technology books we've been talking about. The Amazon book by Brad Stone and the Twitter book and Fred Vogelstein's book about Google and Apple. And I that's work, but boy, it doesn't feel like work when you listen. Audible.com/windows. Try it free today. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We are talking about Microsoft. We just finished talking about Threshold. And it's interesting that you say there will be a SKU that will have a desktop. Because a lot of what seems to be happening is, you know, this post-PC thing. And now the numbers from IDC and others are pretty bleak for PCs. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes? Am I correct?
Yeah, but, you know, yes. I, we probably talked about this. How weird is it that, you know, PCs have evolved to the point where they kind of last for a while, you know, that plus the combination of these simpler, less expensive devices let you eke more time out of the use that you get from that. You know, I think the fear for the PC industry is that once that time does finally expire, many people will discover they don't want or need a PC, you know, that they can get what they need to get done with whatever, a tablet, phone, whatever it may be. So
I really liked the and I know you guys did too, the Nokia 2520. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as soon as a keyboard comes out for that might be my laptop.
Yeah, so no one, Mary Jo, you've never gotten the keyboard still?
Nope, never got the keyboard.
It was free for a while.
Yeah,
I know. That's, well, true. You could order it for free, but they weren't going to deliver it to you for up to 6 weeks, so I don't know where it is.
Up to and including keyboard? And maybe even more.
Yeah.
So sometime next year.
Yeah. I know. So I don't feel like I can truly judge it without the keyboard. And that's because I want to try Office on it. It's not because on a tablet you have to have a keyboard. If you use it for certain things, it just is easier to use it with a keyboard.
Yeah, no, I agree. And a trackpad for the desktop.
Yeah.
Because those those targets are so teensy-weensy.
They are.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, customers, according to analysts, are not buying touch-based PCs.
Yeah, why Mary am Jo I not surprised?
I am surprised. I told everybody, don't buy a Windows 8 machine if it doesn't have touch. You don't like touch, Mary Jo?
I think you don't need touch. It's nice to have if you like touching your laptop, but you don't need touch on a laptop. You do need touch on a tablet. I've said this all along. Everyone laughed and said I was a fool. But I guess there are a lot of fools out there.
That's a bit harsh. I don't know if we called you names.
You didn't call me a fool. Others did.
I just think, well, first of all, is there a premium for touch? I guess there is.
Yeah, there is.
How much is it? $100? $200?
Well, it almost doesn't matter because this is so typical of the PC makers to kind of bite themselves on the nose. You know, they have this thing that could truly differentiate these devices. And they use it as like a value add in the more expensive devices. Right. And so what happens is everyone just buys the cheap ones, which don't have touch. I'm actually with Mary Jo, to be honest. I mean, for myself, my daily use laptop, such as it is a non-touch-based Samsung Ultrabook. You know, I don't really miss not having touch. But if it wasn't a matter of cost, I mean, touch, it's not a problem having it on there. I mean, it's, you know, and I do think that this is kind of the future. This is something Microsoft is pushing very hard, but it's so strange. You know, we come into this holiday selling period. Windows 8.1 has shipped, but most of the PCs in stores have Windows 8. And very few of them have touch. You know, and it's like, this is just the industry doing the wrong thing all over, you know, just all over the place. It's too bad.
Yeah, because I have to say, if you are running Windows 8, it's nicer to use it with touch, yeah. Right? Because it was designed to be a touch-first operating system. I mean, you can use it with a mouse, you can use it with a keyboard, but if you really want to make use of Windows 8 the way it's designed and intended, you want a touch machine, right? But I just still don't want to be touching my laptop, and I've said it a million times, I'll say it again, because I'm really fast with a keyboard and a mouse, and I don't want to take my hands off and touch the laptop.
Yep. Yep.
That's why. It's not because I hate touch. It's just, for me,
it's
that's
not, how
not
you use
a
it.
Productive way to work.
But yeah. I have to say, the way 8's designed, like the charms,
yep.
It's just really natural yep. to swipe the charms in. I guess Windows C is the charms key, but...
But who knows that?
Right.
I have no idea how to close a Metro app except for swiping it down and off. I don't know what the keystroke is for that.
I do a lot of keyboard combos on my computer. I really do.
Well, I think if you're a keyboard person, you would learn them. But I think since there is a natural gesture for that, swiping for multitasking seems like such a natural gesture.
Yeah. And it's fair to say, too, once you've started touching screens.
It's hard to stop touching.
It's hard to stop touching. Yeah. It is strange. I mean, I do anyway. I tend to, I've even done it on this screen. You kind of reach out. Because the Windows 8 stuff, it's like huge icons and tiles and things. I mean,
I've never argued for touch to replace a mouse.
No.
Right.
No.
Or keyboard. Oh, no. By any means.
Listen, I can't even use a trackpad to replace a mouse. If I don't have one of those like ThinkPad type little eraser head deals, I have to attach a mouse.
Right.
I find trackpads to be too vague and not precise enough.
Right. So the point is, the more everybody's different, and I think the more options the better. And yet, I guess the consumers are so price sensitive now that they're just not going to pay extra for a touch screen.
They're not going to pay extra for anything, Leah.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean by the PC industry screwing themselves. They know this. People buy the cheapest possible thing they can buy every single time.
And it's crap.
And now they expect it to last forever.
It's crap.
It's
the hardest thing for me. I run into this on the radio show because there's where I talk to the unwashed masses. And don't tell them I said that. And no, they're bathed. Yeah,
India's calling.
But they don't. They all get calls, especially around about this time of year. I need a computer. What's your budget? $400, $300, $200. And it's very hard for me to, you know, I want to say you can't.
It's just some stuff. Don't. But it's like Asus little touch system.
It's garbage.
3 hours of battery life. And you're like, ugh.
I feel guilty telling them you need to spend $1,000. That's a lot of money. That's bread. That's dough. That's moolah. That's significant. But at the same time, I think it's true. You need to spend $1,000. Yeah. You want a computer, you got to spend $1,000.
Right. And that's where suddenly, a $500 iPad that has only 16 gigs of storage, people are like, maybe I could
write my papers with that.
Sure.
But I'm very sympathetic to people, and I don't want to be the guy who comes on the air and says, oh, no, you got to spend $1,000. But I also, in my back of my mind, I'm thinking.
I read these reviews of devices. It could be anything. It could be that review of the Surface 2 that was in the New York Times. They give it a positive review. And he said it was affordable. And I'm thinking to myself, in what world is a $500 device that has no software? How is this
and
affordable?
And needs the keyboard. You still need the keyboard.
Right. It's crazy to me that, I don't know, I don't mean to blame Apple exactly, but I feel like Apple has removed pricing as part of the story. You know, the people look at these things and like they're expensive, and they're just not expensive because this is what things cost. But I think that anything that costs $500, most people need to think twice about buying stuff like that. I don't understand where people have the money.
Well, and to be fair, you said the same thing about the Xbox One, $500.
Yes, I say anything about anything that costs $500. I mean, $500. I keep telling you, for many years, I could claim this is not true anymore, but I've only owned a handful of cars that could cost more than $500. Like, I mean, I don't.
Well, now let's not live in the past, Paul. I remember a brand new Volkswagen with $2,000, but
that's all.
That's not realistic anymore.
No.
We're in a tough economy. A lot of people out of work. A lot of people underemployed. Yeah. Right. And even if you are fully employed, the idea of spending that much money is difficult when you see things that cost $350.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a value proposition to the PC because they last for years and they work and all that kind of stuff. And Microsoft has really contributed to this problem by ensuring that the last, I think, three versions of Windows Now have lower requirements than their predecessor, or at least identical requirements. This is something that had never happened before. Every new version of Windows upped the requirements. You know, you needed to get a new PC. It sort of contorts the way that people think about things. You know, I wrote a review of the iPad Mini, the one with Retina display, very expensive device, really. And people were saying, well, yeah, it's expensive, but this is how I counted that. I bought the most expensive one I could get, but I'm going to use it for years and years.
Right.
And it's like, geez, I don't think you are. I really don't.
Years.
I don't think that those things have the staying power of a PC or a Mac, for that matter. I mean, I think those, you buy one of those things, you could use it for years and years. The iPad or a phone or any of these tablets, whatever it is, are designed to be superseded by something new within 12 months.
Right.
And then 2 years from now, I mean, completely blown out of the water. It's a strange mindset we've gotten into when it comes to buying things.
Yeah, the old saying, you get what you pay for. People don't want to hear it, right? But you do get what you pay for, right? I always complain, there's nowhere to really see PCs here in Manhattan side by side because we have Apple stores, but we still don't have a real Microsoft store.
There's a retailer in New York, though, JR or
J&R. J&R.
But there's a really good store I found near me called Datavision in the mid-30s here in Manhattan. And I went in last night. In fact, I looked around. They had so many different Windows PCs. Oh, quite a few were touch. So the guy came up to me and said, what are you looking for? And I said, I'm looking for a new laptop. And he's like, oh, what do you want to spend, like a couple $100? I'm like, no, I said, actually, money is no object for me. And he turns and he goes, let me show you something then, you know. So he brought me to see the TVBook 9 from Samsung. And he showed me the new Sony Vaio, which I'm kind of leaning towards getting. And I'd love to hear from the chat room if you guys think this is a good idea. But yeah, he showed me all these devices and he said, nobody ever wants to see these, but this is what's really awesome. And these are the amazing PCs, right? These are the ones everyone wants. They're super thin. They're light. The Sony Vaio 13, the Pro Vaio 13 has that sheet battery you can attach that adds like 8 more hours of battery life to your machine. The machine without the battery weighs something like 2.4 pounds. I mean, that's the kind of device I want. And I'm willing to pay for it because I know I'm going to get what I pay for. And I kept my last laptop for 3 years. I'm going to keep this one for 3 more years, probably.
Yep. Yeah. And the one you're looking at? Is that touch based?
It is. I wish it was not, but it is.
Well, you don't have to use it.
I know. I'm not going to use it. Yeah.
Anything at that price point is going to be touch based, right?
It is.
Yeah.
I think.
If I see you using this in a press room, I'm just going to walk by and touch stuff on your screen.
I know you are. And everybody will.
It's sort of like someone walking in the room and saying, Xbox off.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. And you know what? I shouldn't say I'm never going to use touch on the screen. Maybe if I get in that mode or if I'm on a plane or a train, maybe I'll use it, right?
It is pretty.
It's a really nice device. Yeah, really thin.
This is probably going back to before Apple stores were around. Maybe not. But, you know, the Sony stores were always a big deal. And I always looked up to the design of these things. And it just seems like it's like they've dropped off the map in the last several years for some reason. But they've always, you know, they were the guys that innovated with these kind of island-style keyboards that we see everywhere that most people think Apple invented. They were the first ones to do that, and they've always been kind of pushing that thin and light thing. And that machine you're looking at has kind of a nice, kind of wedge, thin look to it.
Yeah.
But I've never seen.
Yeah, so that's where I'm leaning right now because I went and tested them all out last night. I was playing around on them, and that one seemed like the kind of machine I would tend to use. You know, the guy's like, what do you want to use it for? If you want it for gaming, this isn't your machine. And I'm like, gaming? No, I want to surf the web. Yeah,
let me tell you.
Wow, it sounds like you actually had a good salesperson there.
I had a great sales guy.
I'm kind of blown away.
He wasn't drooling then.
He knew what he was talking about.
He did. He did.
Because it is in a high-performance laptop. It's a beautiful laptop. But for what you do, it's plenty.
It is. Yeah. Way more than plenty. Yeah, I could even get the, you know, i5, a Core i5 and be fine with it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's another thing that's really a common problem, which is that people... Well, actually, you did the right thing, which you don't even ask. You said, well, let me try it. How does that feel? That feels good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a shoe. You don't ask, what's the processor in my shoe?
I know.
Not yet.
Not yet.
And you can't ask people even. You can't ask for recommendations in a way because everybody's usage patterns are so different.
Yeah, this kills me because that's another thing that happens on the radio show. I know somebody calls in, I want to buy a laptop. What should I get? Then they want me to say, oh, you should get the Toshiba Cosmo 432. And goodbye. And it really would be better radio. But I always have to go through all this. Well, what do you want to do with it? You want thin? You want light? You want a touch screen? You want Windows? What do you and the same thing with phones now. It used to be you could say, I'll just get an iPhone. Now there's
We're going to look back. I think, honestly, in the future, I think this stuff is going to get simpler. I can't. The way that smartphones are now reminds me of computer systems in the early 1980s when it was like Commodore, Atari, TI, and then you had all the CPM machines and the IBM and Mac and Apple II. And, you know, it was just so much stuff. This is like the salad dressing conversation again. You know, at some point it just gets ridiculous.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say just no shoe will ever need more than 640K of RAM. I'm just saying.
You're going out on a limb there.
You could quote me. You could quote me on it.
Does it have an Android app though, Leo?
Probably will. You, Paul, you just can't stop buying these things. You have now another. You did review the Venue.
This is a review unit, so I didn't actually pay for this
one. No, I'm not. I'm not saying you have deep pockets.
I don't anymore, Leo. I have.
The only reason they're deep is because you keep putting stuff in them.
I attach like a lawnmower, you know, to my wallet, and now it's just spewed out. I guess it's spewed out reviews
green.
On the inside.
Spewed out green. Yeah, so you liked the Venue 8, I remember.
Yeah.
This is the Lenovo Mix 2.
Right. And so I think the Dell was the first viable mini tablet running Windows, right? And I think it was the first one running Windows 8.1. So this is the second one I've seen that runs 8.1, you know, out of the box. Very, very comparable, I would say, to the Dell. Similar ports, almost identical platform, you know, processor speed, RAM, et cetera, et cetera.
This is so weird because the picture you have on your review makes it look like a Nexus 7, basically. But it's running Windows Professional. I mean, it's so weird.
Yeah, if you scroll, I actually have a picture of it next to an Nexus 7 somewhere in there, so you can see that it's bigger, and that's that picture you're looking at there. It's with the Venue brand. You see, they're basically identical.
Yeah,
it's a little lighter. It's, you know, shinier and silver instead of black and grippy. Very, very, very similar.
There it is next to the Nexus 7. You've got to. So it is a little bigger.
Yeah, it's an 8-inch screen versus a 7. So
you got to it's got to be some sacrifice in performance, though.
Actually, I found these things to be pretty good. In fact, that is another weird problem now in the PC space because, and I do this too. I know people do this because people write in all the time. I get crazy questions from people. Like they'll see something like this and they'll say, "Hey, does it run Hyper-V?" It's like, you know what? Your head's in the wrong place.
It's a tablet.
And but people see this and they think, you know, okay, I could carry this thing around a bag. It'd be super light. I could attach a Bluetooth keyboard to it. You know, I could do all this stuff. And it you get into this kind of a silly thing. Yes, you could do that stuff. And if you think about how Microsoft markets Surface 2 versus Surface Pro 2, one is entertainment with a little bit of productivity, and one is productivity with a little bit of entertainment. You know, these things are pure companion devices, I think. But they, you know, they come with Office, which is nuts because it makes those things make people think beyond the point of the device. Yes. Yeah. A lot of people, my computer. Yeah. People want to know, okay, did you get the stylus? How does the stylus work?
Right.
Because this is some holy grail for a certain segment of the population that this thing will be able, you'll be able to do handwritten notes on it. I did not get the stylus for this particular device. That activity was very disappointing on the Dell. And I know that there are people who, you know, think, I don't need a keyboard. I could just take notes with this thing. I could record notes. I could write handwritten notes. And I think that would be wonderful for very small percentage of people. It's kind of a small audience, but I think every single one of those people reads my website because I hear from a lot of them. But,
it's a bigger audience than you thought.
It's interesting how exceeding the bounds of what you can do with like a Nexus 7 or an iPad mini or something, your head starts to race a little bit. Like, oh, this is a PC. It's a 64-bit processor. It's only running a 32-bit version of Windows. It only has 2 gigs of RAM,
but
you know, the possibilities are there. This thing could run Hyper-V if you had more RAM in it and a 64-bit. It could. That's what I just said is ludicrous. But it's this is where people's heads start turning, you know.
Let's talk CEO Hunt and the latest. And I know that we mentioned before the show started that Alan Mulally was on CNBC and had some comments on the speculation. We'll talk about that as well as the new Mustang. But first, a word from Personal Capital. You know, as your financial life gets more successful, and I hope for all of you it is, it also gets much more complicated to manage. You know, when we were in college and you didn't even, you know, you barely had a checkbook, it was a lot simpler. But then nowadays with credit cards and loans, mortgages, all the stuff that goes along with being a grown-up, it is not easy. But one of the things that's very important as a grown-up is you got to have your retirement. You've got to have your savings. You got to pay attention to your investments. And that's hard to do when you don't have all the information you need. Well, the kinds of devices we were just talking about are perfect for, I guess, what I would call a dashboard app, the ability to look at graphs and charts and reports that give you the whole financial story. And it used to be you'd need a computer and a keyboard to enter in all that data. Nowadays, no. Nowadays, no. You log in to personalcapital.com/windows. It's free. You set it up. There's Bill Harris, by the way, walking his dog on the waterfront. He's the guy who founded Personal Capital, former CEO over at PayPal and Intuit. He learned, I think, at Intuit that people want the kind of information that the programs like Microsoft Money and Quicken gave you, but they don't want to sit there and enter all that data. Personal Capital, signing up just takes a minute, and it'll pay big dividends. You log in, you attach your accounts, and now you know exactly where everything is, where it's going. You've got a dashboard, you've got graphs, and you get free investing advice. PersonalCapital.com/windows. This is free. So sign up today. PersonalCapital.com/windows. Get all of your accounts in one place on your phone, on your tablet, on your PC, and you're going to be very happy. PersonalCapital.com/windows. We thank you, Bill. Bill was on Triangulation a few years ago, and I signed up then, and so I thank him for his support in my life.
Want to grow up, Leo?
No, grow up. One checkbook, no credit cards, and live on pizza for the rest of your life. I know, Paul. I know that's what you want. I know that's what you want. Alan Mulally was on CNBC this morning, and they asked him about the rumors that he would be at some point CEO of Microsoft. He says, I have no plans to make any changes, and we don't comment on speculation, which is a non-denial denial, right?
The exact same one they've been making for the past 7 months.
Right. So where do we stand right now? We talked a little bit about this on Twit, and Dvorak thought that Thompson, who's already on the board and is, in fact, leading the search for CEO, would be a logical candidate. So he thought he'd pull up Dick Cheney and say, you know, I've looked everywhere, and I think it's me. You don't think so? He's out of the picture.
He's out, but you know what? I don't believe anybody who's denying they're out. Anybody who says they're out, I still don't believe them.
Yeah. Yeah. John Thompson.
You know who would be a great CEO? It would be that Steve Ballmer guy.
Yeah.
Ballmer's looking better after you look at all the other candidates.
So maybe that's all this was, you know.
Is it? Oh, is it? We're down. Are we down to Mulally and Elop? Is that the?
No, we don't know.
We don't know.
The truth is, we don't know. There's, you know, one thing I want to say about this is everybody's taking their cues on this from different contexts, right? So whenever you see Mulally as being listed by anybody as their top pick, it means that person's probably talking to Wall Street because Wall Street's really keen on Mulally. They want an outsider. They don't want an insider. And when you see somebody like Satya Nadella mentioned, It means the journalists who are talking to him are probably talking to people who work in the cloud and enterprise team at Microsoft, because they really want him to be the CEO. That's why I haven't even speculated out there. I haven't put any guesses out there, because I feel like it all depends. I ask a lot of people, who do you think is going to be the next CEO? No two people agree. It depends on where you sit. If you're in Silicon Valley, you want Tony Bates probably, because he's the Skype guy, right? I don't think anybody knows.
That kind of speculation is in some ways pointless, because the process by which one becomes a CEO involves, A, them being interested in the job for starters. In the case of Alan Mulally, it's not very clear that he is even slightly interested. And other political forces that we know nothing about. I mean, so I assume you do have like preferences for people you might want to see as CEO. It may not be wise to say what those are, because when that person doesn't become CEO, you know, you don't want to come down on the wrong end of something like that. But I don't know. There are good choices. There are terrible choices.
I still stick by what I've been saying all along about this, which is I know there are a lot of people who think that it's time for an outsider to come in and run Microsoft. And whenever you look at Microsoft in the past, the outsiders never do well at that company. So
Elop's not an outsider, though, is he?
He's more an insider to me, right?
Yeah, he worked there.
He worked there. He's been,
I mean, everyone comes from somewhere. Nadella worked at Cisco or something. But that was like 20 years ago, you know? I mean, he's clearly an insider.
Yeah.
So Satya Nadella would be one. Stephen Elop would be another.
Tony Bates is obviously
one. Tony Bates, the Skype guy. But now he's an outsider.
He's been working at Microsoft for the worst of both worlds.
You know? I don't know. I don't think he's been at Microsoft that long. And hasn't Skype really had a lot of autonomy? I mean, where is he in, is he in Redmond?
But that's what makes me nervous.
Is he in Redmond now?
But he's not.
He works. His job now is heading up evangelism and business development at Microsoft. Right. So, he has a new job. That's a pretty high level and powerful job there.
But he hasn't been there that long.
He hasn't been there that long.
If you ran Microsoft and you were buying Skype, I think most people would have, depending on the year it happened or whatever, would have said, "This business is going to be part of what used to be Windows Live or something like that." Maybe today you'd say, "Well, it's going to be part of Office," you know, something like that. Nope, it's a completely new division of Microsoft, you know? That is so crazy, that kind of thing. You know, and I feel like Skype has kind of run its own show, you know, since they've been supposedly subsumed by Microsoft. A little nervous about that.
I know, for better or for worse, right? Like, there's a lot of things that people are complaining about still with Skype. Like what we talk about, when you get called, all your devices ring, your IM's not synced up.
When you call me now, Leo, or when Twit does, you know, obviously Skype, the application runs. I've turned off Skype to Metro apps. I don't have to. Actually, no, I haven't. That still runs. I got that up in the corner. Outlook.com, no way to turn that off. That thing fires up. One of my phones fires up. Now the Xbox One fires up too. That's hilarious, by the way. And so I have all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And the thing that kills me about it isn't that they all ring. I mean, you can make some case that they should all ring, because who knows where I am, and that's kind of cool. But when I answer the phone, they keep ringing.
That's the other weird. Ones.
That's stupid.
That might be just a signaling issue.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, all I know is
they can't fix it.
And in Outlook.com, at least, they turn on that thing without telling anyone it was coming, and there's no way to turn it off.
Yeah,
and that drives me nuts.
You know what we may be seeing is that there is, frankly, no good candidate.
That's what a lot of people are saying now. They're like, you know, now that they're actually having a search, it's like, who knows about everything, right? Who knows about enterprise? Who knows about enterprise and Xbox and Skype and this and that? I mean,
I do.
No, Paul, I don't think you're in the running. Well, didn't Bill Gates have an office of the president for a long time where he had multiple people? I mean, I'm wondering if that's
They have senior leadership team at Microsoft today, and I'm sure they'll continue to have that.
That's what they need, like a quorum. You know,
I mean, I'm sure every company is run to some degree that way. No one could run the whole thing.
No,
but what do you want in a CEO? You want somebody with some vision about the direction of the company as a whole, or does the board
you? The thing I want from Microsoft from a CEO is what Alan Mulally did for Ford, which is why I brought him up originally. I want someone to walk in with a fresh outside perspective and honestly evaluate everything they're doing and render some verdict, whatever it is. And I'm not driving towards some end game where I think this strategy doesn't make sense or this strategy really does make sense. I just want someone intelligent who has the power to change if need be, to examine what they're doing and make decisions, you know, accordingly. And my big fear for this company is that they've set this thing up so that that can never happen. You know, that they're just going to go down this path regardless of the...
Is Ray Ozzie the wrong guy?
Yeah.
No one's mentioned him at all.
No.
That's because
I like Ray. I don't know. I'm coming around to Ray Ozzie. Maybe.
I don't think it's because he's a bad guy. I mean, I just think he probably is no interest in this. He's off running a startup now, right? And he seems happy.
Come on, there's interest. Look, if you said, "Hey,
the other thing
you
is,
want to run one of the most important companies in America,"
I think a lot of people would say no.
Really?
He couldn't cause change to happen when he was there last time, which is too bad,
right?
Because they really could have used it.
How about Eric Schmidt? No, I'm serious.
The creepy ice cream man guy?
It would kind of put an end to the Scroogled campaign, I'm sure. But
yeah, that might put a kibosh on that.
He did pretty well for the last 10 years. It. Yeah, he might like it.
Yeah. I don't think he's the guy they're looking at either. I mean,
I'm just trying to look outside of this candidate list because I'm not impressed.
You can get crazy. How about Skart Farstall? I mean,
No.
How about the guy from Rim, like Thorsten Hines?
Thorsten Hines. Oh, the...
guy from Acer's looking for a job.
No.
I guess we could go all kinds of different places.
Is Steve Jobs, we can pretty much count him out.
Steve Jobs is out. Yeah. He's recused. Yeah.
He would be good. He's what you need, isn't he? You need a Steve Jobs? Maybe Ashton Kutcher could play Steve Jobs.
Yeah, there
yes.
you go.
Right. No, we get Justin Long.
You get Noah Wiley.
Yeah.
You know what I hope happens? I think this would be the most awesome thing. If somebody gets chosen who wasn't on anybody's list.
Right.
Yes.
Like there have been hints, somebody maybe from one of the telcos. I mean, it would be awesome. Like if
How about a Marissa Myers type person?
She was rumored a while back, but as the rumors about who was on the short list kind of condensed, what happened was at the very beginning, Ballmer said he and the search committee were talking to everybody. Like they talked to like 40 people, and it was just kind of putting the feelers out. Then the list supposedly has contracted, and now we're down to just a few.
Is that list official, or is that the pundit list?
Pundit list.
So is there an official list?
No.
So
there is one.
It was a 40-person list, but we never even saw that.
No, we never saw it.
So we don't know. We don't really know who they're thinking of. These may be all things we've made up.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk could be the guy.
Exactly.
Well, again, I think Mary Jo said it earlier. Or maybe it was you, Leo. I don't remember. But, so, you know, finding the one person who could do this job,
tough.
Not easy. Maybe not possible.
Yeah.
This person's going to have a lot of on-the-job learning. It's going to be awful.
Yeah. I know. It's going to be tough. I mean, if you think about, like, what we know, we've been covering the company for decades. Look at all we still don't know.
Imagine if it's someone from outside the company. And then you're going to have the guys who are running the various major parts of Microsoft coming in and pushing their agendas on this person.
And he doesn't know nothing.
And he has no idea what's going on. He doesn't know the history, the politics, all the baloney behind all this stuff. This is not a person to envy. I mean, whoever does this... he's going to have a miserable time of it.
How many strings? How many strings is Bill Gates pulling at this point?
Yeah, all of them. He's like the puppet master.
He's in the search too, right? Isn't he part of the committee as well? And he said he's going to have a very hands-on role in working with the person as they come in.
Not what you want, right?
I know.
I mean, seriously, it would be like.
Although he has to
Microsoft.
He has to educate him, right? Like, he has to kind of try to pass off some of his corporate knowledge to the guy. And we assume it's a guy.
All right. Here's a wild card from the chat room. Jeff Rakes.
I know. A few people have mentioned him.
Yeah, the proto-Bill Gates.
He apparently just left as CEO of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Right.
He was president of Microsoft's business division for many years.
Yeah. For many years, he was seen as a potential... successor, but
worked at Microsoft since 1981.
I'm gonna bring back Paul Maritz or Brad Silverberg
but he's kind of an insider outsider. He has Bill's trust, obviously.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought Paul Maritz was gonna come back.
Yeah.
I hear no on that from my sources, for whatever that's worth, right? And, you know, I think a lot of these people who were there before, a lot of them probably would say, oh, that might be kind of fun to come back and try to, quote, fix Microsoft. But a lot of them have moved on, and they're in new roles at new companies, and some of them are either near retirement, they're billionaires, they don't need the money or headaches.
They're running charities and things. I mean, going back to full-time work when you don't have to, I just think that's kind of stuff peters out. It was a little different for Steve Jobs when he came back to Apple, because he was still running a technology company, and, you know, he got kicked out of his own company. I think that bothered him a lot, and he really wanted to set that right. And so he had a kind of a different type of axe to grind. I mean, I these guys that have left Microsoft under circumstances, good or bad, I think, like Mary Jo said, I think they've moved on.
It's going to be, you know what? Yeah. It's going to be an obscure name. It's going to be a great disappointment. The stock price is going to tumble.
Whoever it is going to suck. I can't wait for this day.
And it's going to be a very difficult challenge. And maybe they'll be getting somebody who's really got some smarts. But I think it's not it's not going to be a name that we know. I bet you.
Carly Fiorina.
It'll be a name you guys know, but not a name that is generally.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe even not.
Oh, God.
Hey, good news. The Nokia regulatory hurdles have been cleared. The DOJ said yes earlier this week, and I guess the EU has said yes now. Or the
EC. How about that? That was a
surprise. I'm shocked. Yeah.
I was too.
Well, you know what? I'm not actually that shocked, because if you think about these antitrust regulators, U.S. versus Europe, U.S. is all about protecting consumers. The EU is all about protecting competition. And in fact, that regulatory agency is called the Competition Commission. Or no, it's the European Commission, I'm sorry. But it's the Competition Commission is what they really are. And this doesn't change anything, right? Yeah. In fact, the language they used, it was almost belittling to Microsoft and Nokia. It was like, you know, their share of this market is limited anyway. So
big deal. Do what you want, guys. Call back when you're a monopoly. We'll talk
and
to you then.
Finland's not in the EU, right? They're not part of the EU? I don't think so. I could be wrong.
I don't think they are, no.
So, no concerns there.
And apparently Finnish authorities just they're busy. They're ice fishing.
I don't know. Finland, I mean, they fought off Russia. They could probably fight off Microsoft.
They're tough. So, Q1, the deal goes through.
I would say so.
And Stephen Elop gets a chair in Redmond.
It's nice to see Microsoft do something on schedule, isn't it?
Finland, I am told, Finland is part of the EU.
It is part of the EU. Wow, okay.
Thank you, Janisku7, who I presume is Finnish. And he was very upset that you would think it was not part of the EU.
Sorry.
I didn't mean that as anything
negative. No, we don't know. We're speculating.
I think of Finland as being fiercely independent.
Corbin Dallas says they're part of the Eurozone. Corbin Dallas has his...
Well, the Eurozone is not the
EU.
That's
not the EU, right? Yeah.
That doesn't mean they have... Do they have their own currency?
Yeah, Finland has a euro. Finland has the euro. No, it has the euro. It does have the euro. That's what I was trying to remember. Are they on the euro? And I haven't been in Finland in many years. Since 2008.
I've never been.
Beautiful country. Beautiful country. Let's see here.
It is the most sparsely populated country in the European Union.
Well, there you go. There you go. There you go.
Joined the EU in 1995.
Thank you. Is Finland in Norway? Because that was
nice. Yes, it's in Wisconsin, Leo. Leo, you know, I don't know if you probably have never noticed this, but we have kind of a bad reputation around the world for being ignorant here in the United States.
I couldn't pinpoint it on a map. I think it's somewhere near North Dakota.
Oh, okay.
Amazon AWS has been a very popular place for programmers to go. The Amazon Web Services. Google has announced they're doing they've actually been doing it for 18 months, but they're now out of the beta, and they're offering their Google cloud
server. Yeah, what do you guys think about this? Is this like a legitimate threat?
Yeah. Compute Engine, you know, people have been using App Engine for a long time. I think Compute Engine is powerful.
I think so. This is Google's public cloud, right? So this is where they have VMs, hosted VMs. But unless I'm mistaken, I don't think they host Windows Server as one of their VMs. It's Linux. Right?
Oh, it's Linux. Oh, yeah.
It is every crazy version of Unix and anything that's sort of like Unix you could imagine, but not Windows.
Which is, okay, to me, this is nuts, right? Even Amazon hosts Windows Server. This is what companies still, and they do want to build on Linux too, but if you want to attract businesses, you've got to host Windows Server.
I don't know if that's what they're trying to do. You would think.
Yeah. I know, you'd think if they really want to go after Microsoft and Amazon, who I would say are right now leading in the cloud, you've got to host Windows Server too.
Yep.
Maybe they figure, hey, if you want Windows Server, get Microsoft.
Or get Amazon.
Amazon, yeah. I believe, is like three times the size of Azure.
Least, I bet. Wow. Yeah, they're big.
Even Azure has Linux.
Yeah. No, it doesn't, Leo. No, it doesn't.
But after this week, this was another interesting thing on Azure this week. They announced they're expanding it to Brazil, which is pretty cool. Because Brazil, if you were in Brazil, you could still use Azure, but your data wasn't hosted in Brazil. But as of early 2014, you're going to be able to actually have your data hosted in an Azure data center in Brazil. So that gives them yet another region that they're adding. And this is something that I think Google is also behind on. They have to support more regions the way that Microsoft's doing with their cloud if they want to really attract true business customers.
There are many
maybe they don't care.
There are countries that cannot companies in countries who cannot legally put their data in the cloud because it has to be hosted at least in the country. Yep. You know, Germany is kind of the big example of that.
And even that, there's still loopholes. There's Patriot Act loopholes where even if you host your data in those countries, the U.S. government can still require Microsoft to give it to them. So, yeah, there's a whole set of issues around that, too.
Give it to Microsoft.
I know. I don't want to talk Patriot Act because every time we do, we get lots of irate people saying, you're not giving it enough weight and importance. It's a huge deal. I know it is. It is a huge deal.
Well, but on that note, the next story we have here is about Microsoft committing this week, as Yahoo and Google did before it, I believe, to encrypt everything that goes through its online services, you know, commercial and consumer, to encrypt the data that it stores for customers and to ensure that the transmission of that data between its own data centers is always encrypted. And is doing this to kind of protect against not just the NSA, by the way, although the NSA, of course, is everyone's favorite example, but any government organization, because there are others that are, you know, spying on this information as it's especially as it's transmitted around.
Upstreaming, so, they call it.
Yeah. I was very interested. I got to find the language he used, but Brad Smith, I believe. Yeah, Brad Smith, the general counsel of Microsoft, wrote a blog post about this. And, you know, you kind of have to be careful because it's not, he can't say they are doing this, but what he can say is that lots of people are reporting that they are doing this. And if this is true, in light of these allegations, you know, we're going to take these steps to change things. But he refers to the government snooping potentially, because, again, you have to be, you know, kind of cagey about it, as an advanced persistent threat alongside sophisticated malware and cyber attacks. That's pretty serious, you know, and They've used some strong language. I mean, they have Microsoft, you know, collectively, not like Microsoft is some kind of living organism, but Microsoft, you know, believes that this kind of activity is illegal. And they want there to be more stringent protections on what they have to give up. And they want to be transparent about when they get requests from the government. And they want to be able to report to that company, hey, the government's asking about you. You know, you might want to do that double delete thing or whatever, because they're coming for you.
Maybe it's just me, but I get the feeling that this is a little bit of bandwagoning from Microsoft. And I don't, please correct me, because my impression, and I'm sure that this is a fairly common impression among the unwashed masses, is that Microsoft pretty much did anything the government wanted for a long time. And now, because of Google and making a big noise about this and others, they feel like, oh yeah, we care too, but I get the feeling that they didn't care until now. Yes or no?
I wouldn't put it that way. I mean, I don't really see that kind of cause and effect. I can assure you that there are guys at Microsoft who have never been happy about this kind of activity. I think the response from Microsoft officially would have been, we do what is legally required of us. I think the thing that has changed is that in recent years, they've come to understand that government agencies are, in fact, spying on the data transmissions that they have and have never revealed that they're doing this. And that some of the requests they've gotten have been onerous in the sense that Microsoft has questioned these things and said, we don't feel that this stuff is legal. I think it's, I don't want to say coincidental because obviously it's related, but you know, Google, Yahoo, and other companies have noticed this as well and have all spoken out about it to different degrees. So I think these things are related. I don't think they're, I don't think it's like, oh, you know, let's jump on the bandwagon, you know.
But I do think part of the reason they're doing this now is because it's hurting them in the pocket. And they're losing, they're definitely losing cloud sales in a number of countries because they're afraid of this. Yeah, they're afraid. They're like, oh, I don't want any U.S. cloud company with my data because of this. And so I think they really know they have to be take a very strong stance publicly about this now because customers are saying, hey, I'm not going to go cloud because of this. And that's one thing Microsoft doesn't want to have. Well,
and what about the international world, too? I mean, there's been a lot of kind of self-righteous outrage about this in other countries. But, you know, from the perspective of a consumer or a business in Germany, Portugal or wherever, the United States government is spying on Microsoft. Microsoft's letting them do it or whatever the, you know, allegation is. We're not going to do business with those guys. You know, that's very serious. So, yeah, I mean, I think in the past they just basically, Microsoft was the on-prem company, really. I mean, Google and Yahoo are only in the cloud.
Right.
And so them jumping on the bandwagon early is just an indication that that is their only business.
That's where they live. I just always got the impression, oh, I'm sure there's a backdoor for the feds.
well, by the way, that's part of the deal. So they're going to let governments through. I love that. This is such a, speaking of Logan's Run, this is one of those like 70s sci-fi terms. We're going to have transparency centers.
Yeah.
And at these transparency centers, which we're going to build in the Middle East and Europe and Asia, wherever, I don't know, we're going to let representatives of government agencies come in and look at the source code for Windows and our other products, our online services, so that they can ascertain for themselves that there is no backdoor. I think that kind of stuff, I don't want to call it an urban myth exactly, but I think it's sort of the tech world's version of that. I mean, we, you know, it's like we've all sort of assumed there was a backdoor to Windows. Okay. But yeah. I mean, there's no actual proof of that. I mean, it's like when you, you know, encrypt your hard drive with BitLocker and you can't get in, or you can't remember your admin password. And so, well, surely there's some way to break into that thing, right? No, there really isn't. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Plus, remember, there was a lot of back and forth. I don't remember the exact specifics of this, but remember, everybody was asking, was there a backdoor in Skype? That's been an issue for years, right? And Microsoft always denied, no way, absolutely no way, right? There's no backdoor in Skype. And now it's like, yeah, I guess there was. And now we're going to play it.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay. That's where I'm coming from.
You know, it was written in Delphi, Mary Jo.
It's not as simple as I'm stating it. It's totally not. I'm oversimplifying.
I think that's the general impression that many of us tech enthusiasts have.
Yeah. Sure.
So,
whatever reason
they're doing, it's good.
I'm glad they're doing it, but it does seem self-serving. It's like, well, oh boy, hey, we better do it now. Yeah. We're losing business. I think you're right. I think it's not so much keeping up with the Joneses as we're losing business outside the U.S., which I'm sure they would.
Well, and not to mention the future. I mean, you know, I cannot write anything that mentions the word cloud without some, I don't know if this is like robots or who does this, but you get these like curiously identical comments where it's like, my clients are universally dumping cloud solutions because they don't trust them because of the NSA allegations. And now they're moving to on-prem services, you know, and it's like, geez, like this is not a human being saying this, but there is some kind of weird, I don't know, conspiracy or what do you want to call it, concerted effort of some kind to undermine trust in these cloud services. And there are certainly, and I have a book about Xbox Music and something as weird as Xbox Music. I talk about this notion of people who believe this cloud computing thing is a little trend and we're going to get beyond this and go back to the way things were. This is just a blip.
Not so.
And it's like, guys, that is not how this works.
Not where we're headed.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that.
It's like people, you know, the car deniers, the early part of the last, you know, century saying, oh, no, these car things, this is not going to last. We're going to go back to some.
It's the people who say, oh, no, DVDs will be here forever.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you know, you're never getting rid of the Blu-ray disc. No siree. Volume licensing. This must be a Mary Jo story.
No, it's Paul. No,
oh, sorry. Hey, Paul.
Just kidding. Yeah, I got to mention this one because this is actually a huge deal for the, for our listeners who are enterprise customers. So you know how Microsoft's doing one Microsoft now, where everything we're hearing, one Windows, one Microsoft. Well, it turns out there's even a volume licensing piece to this, and it looks like they're going for one volume licensing contract. And right now, if you're a business who buys from Microsoft, you know it's like it's licensing soup over there. You get enterprise agreements, Select Plus, you got Microsoft Business and Service agreements, you've got Microsoft Office Online agreement. So the idea seems to be that Microsoft's going to move to this more centralized foundational kind of an agreement called Microsoft Products and Services Agreement. So MPSA is what you need to know. And you're going to sign this one agreement with them if you're a customer. And then on top of that, there'll be various things for your different products that you commit to, and you have to make minimum commitments, etc. We don't know the pricing yet. We don't know the final details, but they're actually starting to roll this out to mid-sized businesses now. It's been in pilot for the past year. And so you may start hearing about this over the next few months as it starts taking more shape. I just wanted to kind of put it out there on people's radar screens so that you're not surprised if you suddenly hear about this MPSA thing. It sounds like one, bottom line, sounds like one licensing contract. That's all you need to
one
know
licensing.
Right now.
Well,
yeah, we'll cover it more as we know more, but that's going to be really interesting because, you know, if you know Microsoft, you know, one of the biggest things that everybody complains about is how complicated licensing is. It's unbelievable how complicated it is. So
I enjoy it. You know, they licensing is different for all Microsoft products, and it's humorously different, right? And so they have like the CAL-based licensing. My favorite is the core-based licensing. That's hilarious. there are all kinds of different licenses. It's really, it's the most awful part of dealing with Microsoft.
It is.
But it's a necessity.
Yeah.
If you're going to be selling a business, you got to have,
licensing.
Volume licensing.
I mean, just trying to stay legal, if you will, within the licensing terms is itself. It should be a video game. You should get achievements if you actually do it.
I think many businesses have a chief compliance officer.
Achievement unlocked. You're in compliance.
You're in compliance.
It would be the rarest achievement of all.
And I know we talked to Xbox One, but we didn't mention the fact that both PlayStation 4 and Xbox One claim to have sold 1 million consoles in the first 24 hours. That was an easy number to hit for Microsoft because they saw PlayStation 4s first, and then they said, yeah, us too.
Yeah.
Now Sony's saying 2.1 million in 2 weeks.
And my initial reaction to so Microsoft.
First of all, this is silly and stupid because this is a long haul product if ever there was one.
Right. Well, yeah, but you know when you're storming Normandy, you want to send back reports that everything's going great. Right, you know, you don't want people to get freaked out. Yeah,
it's going
to
be a long war in this case.
It's going to be a long war. Yeah, it's like a ground war in Asia is what it is. Yeah. So these numbers are weird to me, you know, because Sony has 2.1 million in 2 weeks. And then Microsoft issued this statement through the blog where they were saying, you know, customers have killed 9 billion zombies and whatever. You know, it was like.
Now that's more important.
These are crazy numbers, you know, like.
9 billion zombies.
It's just like, like stats from games.
Does it bother you that Microsoft knows how many zombies you've killed?
No, because I know that because of the NSA allegations that everyone is spying me at all times, and I am moving to on-prem solutions, Leo.
So many people are scared over about that Kinect being always on.
Yeah, no, it's
people think
at me right
I'm
now.
Nuts that I have a Kinect in my living room. It's like, what do they get? What? Why? Are you kidding?
If you go to the Microsoft store right now and you buy the only third party at the time I looked mount you can get for the Kinect, where you can put, you know, we'll attach it to virtually any TV.
Yeah,
it comes with it actually. And this is the Microsoft store. It comes with a sheath that you can like a hood, like you'd put it on a Falcon, so that it can't see you.
Go away, Xbox.
But I have to say, honestly, and this is a little off topic, but let me get to that.
They don't have a command Xbox camera off.
But you can turn off the camera.
Yes, you can. Of course you can.
You can.
Just unplug it.
At least there's a button in the
control
panel thing. I don't know.
We don't know what it does.
Microsoft hasn't been selling the Xbox One for as long as Sony has been selling the PS4. So, doing a little bit of simple date math, whipped up my Julian Calendar algorithms and figured out that Microsoft has until Friday to sell 2.1 million Xbox Ones. So we'll see what happens tomorrow if they make an announcement. But... I know.
Who cares? It's a silly thing.
People do care, though. That's the problem.
But the people who care are silly people.
Well,
I'm sorry. That's silly. Who cares?
Okay, so here's a statement that people make, for example.
Mine is better than yours. I sold to you.
Actually, that's how it boils down. People have a stake in this for some reason. So, for example, the Xbox 360, despite being in the market a year longer than the PS3 or the Wii, is not first, not second, but third in sales for that generation of consoles. Which, by the way, is technically true, but it ignores the fact that number one is a runaway number one, like 25 million more copies sold than the other two, and that number two and three are, in fact, neck and neck. Like, they basically have both sold 80 million units. So, technically, Xbox 360 came in third of three in the previous generation. It's a little more subtle than that. So... you got to remember, if you go back to the generation before that, the Xbox, the original Xbox, wasn't even in the game. It was a joke, sales-wise, compared to the PS2 and the whatever Nintendo had.
We had Adam Sessler on a Triangulation yesterday, my old friend from Tech TV, who's covered games since 1998. He was at X-Play at G4 and now is on Revision 3 Games. And he said, you think that people are vicious in the Mac versus PC or Android versus iPhone wars. Right. You ain't seen nothing.
Oh, no.
Xbox versus PlayStation people, it's vicious.
I'm dumb enough to write about video games. I'm dumb enough to compare mobile platforms and Macs and PCs. I'm dumb enough to do all this stuff. I'm stupid. I've never learned my lesson. I'm lucky. I get to hear from all of those people, Leo. It's fascinating. Yeah.
He said he was actually in fear for his life.
Yikes. Yeah.
That he, you know, because he wrote or said in a store in a show that really this whole 1080p versus 720p thing is meaningless.
By the way, I actually can tell you that that's a fact because I have all these games and on all those platforms.
I defy you to tell the difference.
I can't not just tell. I can take screenshots of both and tell you that they're identical. Yeah. And you know, in my review of the Xbox One, I said. The Xbox One is superior to the PS4. And then I kind of spelled out why that was so. And someone wrote, you can't write that like it's a fact. That's your opinion. And your opinion is wrong. And blah, 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 blah. And it goes on and on. It's like, dude, okay, first of all, let's step back 1,000 words. Yeah, that's what a review is. It's not a statement of fact at a trial.
Put this in Wikipedia.
It is literally my opinion. Yeah.
Wow. Plus, what about his opinion?
And yours is not an opinion, sir? Yeah. Mine is fact. PlayStation 4 is factually better.
You've got to be really crazy and stupid to state an opinion online these days, you know?
And that's what Adam said. He said, I told my building staff, be careful. I've apparently stepped into a minefield.
By the way, before these consoles were even out, before anyone even had one, there were these crazy arguments online. And I'm going to get this stuff wrong, and please, I don't want to hear from anyone about the details that are wrong here because I just do not care. You know, the PS4 has GDDR5 memory, and the Xbox One only has GDDR2 memory, and blah, 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 blah. You know, yada, yada, yada. On and on. Like, all these stupid little minuscule, pointless technical facts. Guys, the thing that's going to sell the Xbox One is like the next Halo game or some game we've heard of. The thing that's going to sell the PS4 is some, I don't know what it is, you know, some PlayStation game franchise thing, whatever. When you use these things side by side, they run comparably. So things change over time. I get it. You know, developers will understand these systems better over time. We'll see. But, I being crazy about this stuff is, it's crazy. I guess I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's just nuts. But, yeah.
I got to say, I've never had a death threat in talking about Hyper-V versus VMware. Right. But
crazy abrasive Hadoop has probably got
you. Oh, yeah. That's become legendary.
You haven't had to go to your doorman and say, okay, now there's some anti-Hadoop people who are going to be coming for me. Just turn them away.
Yeah.
I had my moment like that was we were at this would have been – oh, God, 12 years, a long time ago. I went to Israel randomly for like a work trip. And while I was there, this guy brought came in and said, "You got to come in here and talk to this guy." And it was like a Russian programmer who worked at I just forgot the name of the company. Mainsoft, I think, something like Mainsoft.
Yeah.
And he was applying for a job, and random had no idea I was there, nothing to do with me, you know, Microsoft, whatever. But his company was secretly recruited by Microsoft to make a port Office to Linux, and that's what he had been working on. And he was using this as information to try to get a job at this other company. And, you know, so I wrote about that. And it never happened. But, you know, back in 2000, I guess this was, you know, Microsoft obviously feared Linux a lot and thought it could take off on the desktop, which at that time was like a threat, you know, like iPads and tablets are a threat today. And I remember walking downstairs from my office, and I'd written this article finally when I got home. And I said to my wife, I said, "I feel like I'm going to see one of those red dots come in through the window. Like, this is going to be like, if I die suddenly and mysteriously, I want you to know that it was Microsoft." Like, I had that fear of the company at the time. Like, they were so all powerful, you know, back in 2000. It was this was a possibility. Like, they're going to take me out, you know. Anyway, it never happens.
You're still here.
This is what you get for reading YouTube comments.
Actually, I think what they did was they put some kind of... Now I just get tired all the time. It was kind of a low-grade laser. Yeah.
Walter White made something from a plant.
Yeah. Right. Magnets.
Our show today, we're going to get to our tips and picks and beer of the week and everything in just a bit. But our show today, first, before we do that, brought to you by Stamps.com. I love the holiday season. We've got a giant tree. I'm really into it. But I'll tell you, the one thing I don't love about the holiday season is going to the post office. It's amateur hour. So everybody who hasn't been to the post office all year decides, I'm going to get in line and mail a package. And if you have to do mailing for a living, this is the worst time. Actually, it really is no good time to waste time at the post office. Post office loves Stamps.com because anybody who uses Stamps.com doesn't need to go to the post office. They could buy and print their own official U.S. postage at their desk with their computer and printer. They don't need a postage meter. They don't need special inks. They just need Stamps.com. Makes your holiday mailing a lot easier because the mail carrier comes to you, picks up the packages. There's even a button in the Stamps.com interface that says, "I have more. Bring the mail carrier back." Well, it doesn't say exactly that, but it's close. Stamps.com is a fabulous, fabulous deal. You get the, I'll show you how you can get the USB scale that will make sure you always have exactly the right postage no matter what you're mailing. You don't ever have to worry about postage rates because Stamps.com automatically updates those. It's so easy and convenient to use. You even get discounts you cannot get at the post office. Why wade through the crowds at the post office when you could do it all right there at your desk, faster and easier, and really more professionally? If you are an Etsy seller or an eBay seller, using Stamps.com makes it look so professional. Visit Stamps.com. Now, there's an $80 value on the front page, and I know you may say, "Hey, that Santa is pretty inviting," but don't click him. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use our offer code WINDOWS. That does two things. First of all, it lets them know you heard about this on Windows Weekly, and Paul and Mary Jo, thank you for that. But it also makes sure that $80 value turns into a $110 bonus offer. We should put a Santa hat on me for true parody there. You get $55 in postage coupons you can use over the first few months of your account. Free. You get a free digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling, but that, you know, they make up for that with a $5 supply kit. And, of course, you get a free four-week trial of Stamps.com. This is the month to do this. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, use the offer code WINDOWS. By the way, if you do international mailing, it fills out the forms for you automatically, too. Stamps.com. And we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. And now it is the back of the book section of Windows Weekly where we give you all the juicy stuff, like Paul Thurrott's tip of the week. Something he spent a lot of time studying up on.
Yeah. All in the interest of work, Leo.
Of course.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people, when they look at the Xbox One, they write about video games and stuff like that. And obviously, that's a big part of the
fools.
Experience.
But... You fools!
But I'm more interested in the user experience stuff and how this is like Windows 8 or Windows Phone or is not like those things. I'm very interested in all this stuff. And obviously, some of the unique things on the Xbox One, like the Kinect voice control and so forth. And so... I've been writing a series of articles, not quite every day, but almost every day, about the various parts of the Xbox One experience. And so you can read that whole set of articles. It's on the site, and there'll be more over time. I just published another one today. But some of the fun things that have come out, I just kind of listed through them about the Xbox One, some of the stuff that I figured out. I mean, I think understanding the differences on the controller and how it works compared to the old 360 controller. The 360 had this notion of like an Xbox guide that would come up. It was kind of like an overlay on top of the system. And you would press that button and it would toggle this thing. The Xbox button, as it's now called, in the new controller works a little bit, not quite identically, but a lot like the start button on a Windows 8 machine, meaning that it brings you back to the what they call the dashboard.
Yeah, that's
the
fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And so each of the buttons, there are a couple of other new buttons, and so I've kind of documented that stuff. Like you can on Windows Phone, and not like you can on Windows 8, oddly, but you can customize the dashboard with your own kind of custom color. And that's kind of a fun thing, because when I walk into my room and I say Xbox on and the thing comes on, the camera looks at me, sees it's me, logs me in, and not only gives me my custom dashboard, which is customized with the things I pin and so forth, but also the custom color scheme, which is kind of cool as well. We talked about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, but you know, I think the big deal with this console generation, whether you prefer the PS4 or the Xbox One, is multitasking. The ability to do more than one thing at once, which is something we take for granted now with a lot of our devices, PCs certainly. And Xbox One, of course, has that snap feature like they have in Windows 8. In fact, it's exactly like the one in Windows 8, where the snapped area is actually a fixed width area. It's not like the one in Windows 8.1, although threshold or something, I wouldn't be surprised if they fixed that. And so you can have two things on the screen at once. And the one I've done the most is you can have a video game playing, and you can have Xbox music in the snapped area. You can be playing your own soundtrack instead of listening to the music in the game. Voice control, like I said, big deal. Much, much better than I ever thought it would be. It works. You can speak at normal volume levels. In fact, one of the funny things I've noticed about it is I'll have the Xbox One over here, and I'll be speaking to Raphael on Skype, and I have to be careful not to say Xbox too much, because every time you say it, listens and it tries to do something, and some of the stuff it's done has been somewhat comical, and he has actually initiated the shutdown of my Xbox by shouting it through Skype. It does.
Xbox One, turn off.
It's like, no, shut up, don't listen to him. It's really funny. That stuff works really well, and you do a configuration the first time you set it up, and it has you turn up the volume very high. Be sure to turn it up as high as you can, because if you do, it will understand your voice when you speak normally, even if loud stuff is going on. So if you listen to
I know, that's so weird. Movie, and I have my center channel speaker right above the Kinect.
Yeah, and you think this couldn't possibly work.
And it does somehow.
It works great. And, yeah. Well, it's got this Array microphone. And so when you do the configuration, it listens to where the sounds are.
Right.
And then it knows to kind of listen to you over there, and it kind of goes beyond that sound.
That's very important for the best results. Always recalibrate if you move your Kinect.
Yeah, it works great. Yeah. But the single greatest feature, and I tweeted this one day, and I think people thought I was kidding, but I mean this honestly, possibly in any Microsoft product ever released ever, is this thing called Xbox Record That. It's one of the voice commands. It only works in games. And this is how this works. So a lot of, you know, kind of the technical gamer types would, and I actually do have this kind of system, you can hook up your console to a recorder, and you can record all your games, and you can post them on YouTube and share them with others or whatever. And why would anyone want to do that? Well, every once in a while you do something awesome. And for me, it's always by mistake. So I'll be in a game and it'll be like the cross map kill with a grenade or some kind of lucky whatever it is. And in the heat of that moment, when you've just done it, and there's no one here that you can high five or enjoy that moment with, you just say, Xbox, record that. And it records the previous 30 seconds. And then it saves it. And
isn't
then you can go
cool?
And you can post
so
it, you can edit it.
Cool.
Yeah, there's a whole system built into Xbox just for this.
But and, whatever you do, do not swear during
yes,
that.
Be careful to swear.
Apparently they're banning people for excess cursing. That's so weird.
Yeah, so some cool stuff in there. And that's
I love
some
that. Stuff. I think that's a nice feature. I like the previous 30 seconds thing.
Yeah, and there's an editor built right into the console. You can edit that thing. You can put titles, you know, whatever. You can do different stuff with it. I just download it and do it on the computer. But there's all this facility right in the console to do that stuff. It's really pretty cool.
Now, look at this. This is, and I won't turn the audio up on this, but this is a YouTube video of a guy swearing. Oops, don't look at that. Swearing at his Kinect. He's playing at the NBA 12K. He apparently swears. I don't. I won't turn the audio up.
Well, his people might.
Jamal called technical. Yeah, gives him a technical foul. It gives him a technical foul,
as it would in the game, as you'd get in the game. Right. I think that's awesome.
It that's gave awesome. Him a technical foul.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. I really do. I think that's cool.
That is actually a nice little Easter egg.
Yeah. Yep.
And of course, because I'm a nice guy, I've never seen that. So,
right.
That's cool. Now you can't yet use Twitch. TV, but
no, but there's a game DVR feature. If you do want to record this stuff and save that stuff, you can record entire game moments. The Twitch thing is for live viewing, right? So that's something that's coming early next year. But if you just want to record an entire game session, you can do that right now. You can share it via SkyDrive and actually maybe Twitch. I think they just don't have the.
I just got the Twitch channel, and HBO Go's not there yet, but I'm sure they'll add that. So this is a work in progress, and there's more stuff coming all the time.
But even the stuff they've got, I love
it that you can save the last 30 seconds.
I'm not going to record my video games, Leo. Like this is not that important. But every once in a while, like
he's
something really
it.
Even
he's doing it.
Don't oh no, I
no. But even if it's something
that's why
funny,
so,
where it's like my son's like, oh my god, I can hear him. He's like, oh my god, he did this thing where he just launched his grenade at the start of a game and it went over the entire map and landed wherever the guy spawned and he killed someone.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I said, I'm like, Mark, say Xbox, record that, and he did. You know, and then you kind of capture that moment, and it's
auto uploaded to the upload site and everything. It's really great.
I think it's so cool. It's so
and then as your friend, I see the stuff that you've done that with.
Yes, yes.
It's so cool. I thought, wow. Paul's
and then you know, I've only done it twice.
Paul's playing a lot of Battlefield 4 is what
there
I
was
thought.
A lot of.
It is a nice feature. Apparently that NBA 2K12, you have to turn that feature on. The technical foul feature. That's. I don't know. I haven't tried it yet.
I think that's fun. I think that's a great idea.
It's a great idea.
Be tough on me because I swear at my computer all the time. I probably wouldn't be able to like type in Word if Microsoft built this into a Windows or whatever. But
so that complete...
you're having a 10-minute timeout, Mister.
Complete guide to Xbox One is on Paul's site, the super site for Windows. Your software pick of the week.
So I guess I have three of them. I don't want to go into any of these in too much detail, but if you want them or need them, they're available. So. There's a new version of the Link Metro app, like the mobile Windows 8 app, which is actually Windows 8.1 specific.
I think we're converting to this soon. I hope it's soon.
Yeah, this looks interesting. Obviously, if you're familiar with Skype on Windows 8, you can look at this and you think, well, it's a lot like Skype. But, you know, they've added support for some Windows 8.1 specific features like that snap functionality. It's got in-app volume control instead of having the one volume. And the ability to, if they allow you to. If someone else shares their screen, you can take it over and, you know, move things around. So sometimes you want to do that in an online meeting. And so that's cool. It's free. If you have, you know, you obviously need to have Link in Office 365 or your company or whatever, but the app is free and now takes advantage of and, in fact, requires Windows 8.1. So that's cool. I don't use this, although I think my wife did use this for a few years. But the Mint Personal Finance app is now available both for Windows 8.1 and for Windows Phone 8. And so I know a lot of people have been waiting for that. That's one of the
it's awesome.
The many apps that, you know, supposedly is going to turn everything around now that we have all the apps. So I await that to happen. But we have, you know, there's another one. And then this one was kind of a surprise, but Microsoft today released a Bing Maps preview for Windows 8.1. And I haven't written this up, but I installed it. And, you know, if you're familiar with Google Earth type stuff, it's one of those apps where you can do like the flybys of cool places, like the Colosseum in Rome is one of the great examples. And presumably this will be an app that takes, you know, eventually will replace the Bing Maps app that's built into Windows 8.1 today or Windows 8, you know, the app that comes in the box. And so this is like a preview version of what I assume is the next version of that. And, you know, you can install alongside. I don't believe, actually, I shouldn't say that. Let me make sure that's true. But I don't believe it takes over. Yeah, so you can install it side by side with the existing Maps app. You don't have to replace the existing one. So you should check that out if you have Windows 8.1. That one looks pretty cool.
Before we get to Mary Jo and her Enterprise Picks of the Week, good news coming out of Congress. You don't hear that phrase very often. Okay. The House has passed the Innovation Act, which is an anti-patent troll act by a very strong...
Leo, are you sure that happened this year? Because my understanding was that Congress didn't pass anything.
This is the first thing Congress has passed all year. 325 to 91. There were two attempts to strip out important features that were overturned. The most important feature, of course, being the loser pays feature, which is a good way to discourage patent trolls.
By the way, that needs to be part of our legal system.
All torts. I agree.
Every spurious lawsuit needs to have some serious requirement for the person that brought it.
I agree.
To pay back.
I agree.
For that waste of time and money.
So I presume now we wait for a Senate vote. But that will be, you know, with a such a strong majority, I suspect the Senate will be fairly easy to get through. And I hope.
Oh, so you actually have no idea how government works then. So let me explain something to you.
Well, you know, yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. Who knows what's going to happen to it. But I know the president supports it. And so if we can get this through to the Senate, we might finally see a little bit of an improvement in the climate, the patent troll climate. The Democrats don't like these loser pay provisions.
They don't. I think it's fantastic.
No, I think it's the right thing. So we'll see what happens in the Senate. They may try to strip that out.
All about punishment.
I agree.
It's part of being parents.
Well, it's very effective, and many countries have this, and it's been very effective in reducing.
In fact, when this is over, I'm going to go punish my kids for something. Probably for
you got your carrot and you got your stick. You
screwed something up. All I have to do is walk
the other. That's what I'm saying.
It's like 10 seconds. Is all
Mary Jo Foley, save us. Let's get your enterprise pick of the week.
All right. This is a real geeky enterprise pick of the week, but it's a good one. It's from, it's courtesy of a guy named Guy Gregory, who's one of our listeners. He works for a company in London called The Final Step, which is a Microsoft SMB partner. So he found out that Microsoft has taken all of the TechNet library documentation for Windows Server 2012 R2 and Windows Server 2012, and they've put it into a single PDF. This thing is gigantic. It's 116 megabytes. It's 7,900 pages. But if you're somebody who needs to have this with you on the go for some reason, like you want to just have it as a reference document, you can actually download this for free from the Microsoft Download Center. And he was super excited about it. And I think some other enterprise readers and listeners will be too. So all you have to do is go to the Microsoft Download Center, type in Windows Server 2012 TechNet Library Documentation. And you're going to find this giant PDF. They just posted it right after
crap.
Thanksgiving.
I just started downloading.
Oh, no. Here it comes, the big-ass PDF.
Oh, no.
This makes my book efforts look all the more feeble. Thank you.
I mean, look at that thing. That thing's like
it's
nuts,
huge.
Right? It's huge, but it has everything in there. It's like how to manage privacy in Windows Server, how to migrate roles, how to install and deploy Windows Server. Everything you could ever want to know about server is in here, pretty much.
Well, if Skype starts working all of a sudden, it'll be because I'm BitTorrenting the PDF Windows Server 2012.
And you're going to carry that around. I know you are.
I'll give it to Russell. He'll want it. So that's a great tip. And your codename pick of the week.
Yep. So codename pick of the week this week is A Blast from the Past. And I thought since we were talking so much about Threshold and Blue, I wanted to talk about another codename that may or may not actually have been the reason Microsoft called Blue, Blue. So there's a blogger at Microsoft. He's very famous. His name is Raymond Chen, and he writes a blog called The Old New Thing at Microsoft, which is very popular. He wrote a post a while back that I never talked about why did Microsoft end up calling the Windows source code trunk, the blue line.
Oh, and wouldn't that have been good?
I know. So he had a whole post about this. And you know why they did this? It was because of the color of the pen on the whiteboard.
That's why it was blue?
It was a blue pen used to diagram the Windows source trunk. They were drawing something. And so then after over time, everybody just referred to the source code trunk as the blue line. Like it just became a thing at Microsoft. And he has the whole story. If you go to The Old New Thing, which is his blog, one of the Microsoft blogs on MSDN, it's a really good story. And all Raymond Chen's posts are excellent. He has a lot of great microspeak posts, like if you care about things they say in Microsoft and nowhere else, and a lot of good history posts. He writes a lot of fun stuff.
7,970 pages. I've downloaded.
You've got them all.
I've downloaded it all. There's not the table of contents alone.
I have wasted my life.
The table of contents alone is like 40, 50 pages, 60, 70 pages. That's all the table of contents.
Yep.
100 pages.
It's not even close to being done.
Oh. A little bedtime reading.
Oh, there's 200 pages.
That thing could kill you if you dropped it on yourself.
There are 300 pages of table of contents.
Yeah. You don't want to print that out probably, but just have it as a handy reference.
Can you imagine? There are people printed out. There were 351 pages in the table of contents. And then there's the what's new. There's
another 300 pages.
Holy camoly. That's a great tip, though. Russell, I got it for you. You've got a USB key. You need a big one. All right.
How big is the file?
I don't know. Mary Jo, did you say? It's probably not that big. Let me see. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I just closed the window right.
it's only 116 megabytes. It's not that big. But 7,000, almost 8,000 pages. That's amazing.
It's amazing.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. That was the code name. Let's do the beer pick of the week.
Okay. So I've got a couple things to say for the beer pick of the week. So today happens to be the date that back in 1933, Prohibition was repealed.
Woohoo! I love that this is like in your calendar.
Woohoo!
That's good.
I have so many beer factoids in my calendar. Facts and factoids.
A liquor ad somewhere. I can't remember. Who has liquor ads anymore? In which they talked about how we survived Prohibition. Like that was
Yeah, we were bootleggers.
Anyway.
We're going to get through this PC downturn, no problem.
Exactly. Yes.
So happy end of the 21st Amendment.
Yes, indeed. So my beer pick of the week has a story, too. My beer pick of the week is from Jack's Abbey Brewing, which happens to be in Framingham, Mass., which is the town next to where I grew up, Ashland, Mass. I, over the Thanksgiving weekend, went to Jack's Abbey. Because I was home, my brother brought me there. And while I was in the tap room checking out the beer picks and checking out some samples, a Windows Weekly listener happened to be in there. I'm not making this up. And so my brother and I are sitting there having beer samples. And this guy comes up and he says, "Hey, aren't you Mary Jo Foley from Windows Weekly?" I said, "I am." And he said, "Oh, I love Hadoop."
You're lying.
This story can't possibly be true.
Steve, who was there filling his growlers, I won't use his last name in case he wants to remain anonymous. Yes, he did say that. And my brother, who's a carpenter, when we left, said, "What the heck is a Hadoop?" I have no idea.
Well, that's a join for you got your 3x8 and your 2x4, and when you have to merge the two, you get your Hadoop there.
It was like the elephant-like thing that was in that Cat in the Hat story.
It's a Hadoop.
So the beer I really liked, and Steve did as well there, it's called a Wicked Hoppy Lager.
It's Wicked Hoppy.
It's not that hoppy. The
insides of my cheeks just sucked in a little when you said that.
I think you would like this. It's a lager, not an ale. It does have a high IBU count on it, but I actually didn't think it was that hoppy. It's called an American Pale Lager. That's their categorization. The name of the beer is Hopponius Union from Jack's Abbey.
So IBU is what?
International Bittering Unit. So it's how bitter the beer is.
It's a measurement of hops.
It's a 65 out of what, 100?
Well, I had a beer yesterday that was 182. It can go over.
Oh, okay. So it's not that. It's not that bitter.
It's not that bitter.
I think I've just lost the taste in my mouth.
Wicked Happy.
Wicked Happy Lager.
Wicked Happy Lager from Jack's Abbey Brewing.
Did you have it on Sunday or Monday?
I still say Sunday and Monday. Yeah. All right. Hey, good beer. Good pick. Congratulations on the Hadoop fan.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
That's classic.
Windows Weekly is everywhere, guys.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Paul Thurrott is everywhere, too. But you'll find him most often at the Supersite for Windows. It's winsupersite.com.
Or in Call of Duty Ghosts.
Or in Ghosts, where he is a member of the Ghost Battalion. He also is writing a number of books, even as we speak. He's completing the Windows Phone book, windowsphonebook.com, and is engaged, embarked upon the, what is it called, windows8book.com?
windows8onebook.com.
windows8onebook.com.
Yep.
And then are He's the 8 and 1 numeric or spelled out?
It's numeric, sorry.
windows81book.com.
Yes.
Easy. And you can get them free there and participate in the crafting of these fine volumes. Mary Jo Foley writes all about Microsoft.
Coming soon to a Kindle near you.
allaboutmicrosoft.com is her blog URL. And we do this show all together now every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. We're moving soon now. It's going to be January, what, 7th, 8th? What day are we moving to? I don't remember. You guys know.
Wednesday
at 11 a.m.?
Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. Right. I thought you meant what day. Yep. It's just whenever the first show in January.
January 8th. Right? That'll be January 8th. It's Wednesday.
What is our – we probably talked about this. I apologize. But what's our schedule over the holiday? Do we know?
Hell if I know. You think I know that stuff?
I don't know. Yeah,
ask your producer. I don't know. You know, because we're going to do a best of. And by the way, I encourage people to do the best of survey. If you've got a moment from 2013 you'd like to include in there, twit.tv/best of.
Well, for example, in 3 weeks on the 26th, that's the day after Christmas.
Yeah, that's the day we'll have the best of, I'm sure.
Okay. And then January 2nd.
That day, I'm going to be sleeping because the day before I will have done 24 hours in a row.
Okay. Okay.
So I think that I don't know actually, but let me ask around. I'm sure somebody knows. I'll ask around.
I'm just curious.
No, you should be. Do you ever deal with anybody here besides me?
Yeah, Tony Wang.
I don't,
is
I don't like those people.
Alex Gumpel.
No, Tony and Alex.
Tony and Alex. Okay. We are closed on January 2nd.
Okay.
No, I know we're closed on New Year's Day. We're going to be doing a show till 4 a.m.
Wow. Oh, you're doing a 20. Oh, actually, wait.
Yeah.
Were we asked to do that. Something on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you actually.
Yeah, we foolishly volunteered.
I don't know what the story is, but again,
yeah, we'll figure that out.
A producer will be in touch.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fine. No, I mean, January 1st is like, whatever. I'm just hanging around.
January 2nd, are we here? Yeah. I have to come in the next day?
Oh, that's brutal.
Oh, that's my day off.
New Year's Eve, not New Year's. You're doing 24 hours
a week.
Yeah, but I'm up till 4 a.m. New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, we're closed. No.
Yeah, but we continue the broadcast till 4 a.m. New Year's Day.
Right.
Then I go home. I sleep. You're saying I will have slept for 24 hours, so I should be okay.
All the Wednesday shows are
That's what it sounds like.
All the Wednesday shows, but what about the Thursday shows? So I guess we're doing a show on January 2nd.
Okay.
If that's all right. If you don't want to, we can.
No, that's fine. I just want to know.
I presume we're doing a show.
They're on Wednesday.
Okay.
They're not on Wednesday till the week of January 6th.
Right.
Yes, then we are doing a show on
So I have now been confirmed by somebody who has absolutely no control over this matter that we will be doing a show on January 2nd.
I think we all accept his wisdom and voice of
John
authority.
John says so. Ask Tony. Hey, thanks, guys. Yeah, I think that's we've now worked that all out. I might not be very coherent.
Yeah, no, that's fine. You'll fit right in.
No, you hope we'll all have had a day to recover.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to drink a lot of hoppy beer that day.
I am not.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.